Why do I conduct my show on this manner? Mondo!
Sweet mother of God, what is the holdup?
Eleanor!
Once again, something wonderful in my life has been turned into a giant crap fest.
Mondo!
Got a little bit more cock for you here.
Eleanor!
Bowtie boy got the big snaggeroonie.
Mondo!
Oh, six of my nipples are tingling.
Eleanor!
See why America loves him so much?
Mondo!
I'd like to smash you in the face with my shillelagh.
Eleanor!
I have no idea what's going on.
Mondo!
He was lying.
He said he never tells a lie.
He was lying when he said that.
Eleanor!
I want a cup.
Well, could you spell that?
C-U-P. I want to see you. Oh, my God.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Stomach batteries to power. Turbines to speed.
For God's sake, strap yourself down.
That's right. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. The show that's going to tell you the truth about what's going on in the workplace. So wake the hell up. It's the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Our engineer, Sock Puppet Sam, is here! And we've got a lot of stuff to talk about, but first, Sam, give us the URL for the site.
That's cupojoe.blogspot.com.
And the email address.
joevec@bellsouth.net.
All right, I want to welcome all of my fans listening in at the White Rose Society. That's whiterosesociety.org. My good friend Ben Birch hosting my archives there. And, of course, all my fans at rantsradio.com listening in on Thursdays and Sundays. It is approximately 7 p.m. here on Sunday evening, August the 22nd. And I just found out I'm going to be late paying the phone bill this month, because of what happened today. Let me explain about something that happened a little while ago and how it ties in to what I'm going to tell you. A little while ago, when my wife went to the hospital for one of her times, and I was attempting to go and see her after work. I think I mentioned this on the show. And I was frustrated because I found out I had a flat tire. And it really wasn't anything more than just the valve stem that got messed up. And I was very fortunate that the next day when I went back there to get it fixed, that the valve stem was not was not anything that cost me anything. It really, really basically fixed it for free, which was very nice of them to do. It was a Goodyear shop over on La Vista Road here in Atlanta. Good people. At any rate, I have been trying to get a spare. The biggest problem I had at that time was the fact that I didn't have a spare tire. Because the donuts, I had two donuts, so I thought I was covered. But one donut didn't fit the rim. And the other donut was flat, and the nozzle was such that it wouldn't work on any of the nozzles of the gas stations that I went to. So it was, like, useless. And finding a place that deals with these stupid donuts, and I hate these damn donuts. I want to have a real-sized tire in there as a spare. So anyway, today I went to my roommate Don, and I said, hey, let's just go take a ride somewhere. And he said, well, I got some recycling stuff that I need to do. And because there's a recycling center near the farmer's market where he goes to drop off cardboard and plastic bottles. He takes this far more seriously than I do. I just dump everything in a trash bag. Yeah, I know, it's not a good lefty thing, but you know, I just don't have the fucking time for it all the time. At any rate, so we're going out there, and I had just crossed Memorial Drive, maybe a mile from the house, almost on here. And my right rear tire, which was not the tire that had gone flat before, goes out. I still do not have a spare. And I'm pissed. Well, thankfully, Don is with me. And we were thinking about taking his car. And actually, it's a good thing that we took my car. Because if that was going to happen, it would have happened to me going to work. And I would have been really screwed over. So we walk back to the house. It's about a 25-minute walk. And fortunately, it wasn't that hot out. And we got his car. And we drove back. And I got the bad tire. And it was Sunday, so we had to try to find a place that was actually open None of the used tire places were open, but there was a Firestone down on Memorial Drive on the other end of 285. And basically, we got another tire there. Basically, I wound up spending $174 and change on four new tires. I figured if I'm gonna get this done, let's get it done all the way. Let's get four new tires. And actually, at $174 for four tires installed, you know, with the alignment and the labor and all that stuff, is not too bad. I mean, they're not the greatest tires in the world, but they're decent tires, and they're good enough for the car that I have, which is a nice car, and I like my car. It's got a very good engine for something with 200,000 miles on it. But I was just getting frustrated. But the problem is, I still don't have a spare, because the donuts are still useless, and they couldn't take one of the tires that I did have, because they didn't have any rims for the car, because they took all the tires off, basically. So I am stuck with four new tires. Well, not stuck with, but I'm stuck with basically the same situation that I had when I first started out, except I'm $174 lighter. And the only good thing about this whole thing is that I have a landlord who's understanding. And the reason I bring all this up is not to talk about my personal problems and stuff like that. Hang on, let me get a drink here. The reason I bring all this up is not to talk about my personal stuff. It's to talk about issues that affect every one of us who just work and live paycheck to paycheck. And it's the type of thing, if I had a meaner landlord, or if I was in an apartment complex where I would get hit with late fees, something like this would kill me. I make $12.76 an hour, okay, which is not a bad wage at all, but it's hardly enough to really make a living on, the same way my parents and, to a certain extent, my grandparents. Well, actually, not my grandparents, because my parents were old when they had me. My dad was in his 40s when I was born, and so was my mom. So my grandparents were talking about turn of the century stuff. But my parents and essentially your guys' grandparents, if you're especially one of the young guys that is on Rant Radio, they had it much better, because when they did work when they did have a job, they made enough money to be able to do all this stuff, to be able to pay the bills and to pay the rent and to have enough money left over. Granted, we have bills that they don't have, but if you look at especially rent situation, overall, we're paying a lot more money. There's inflation is still going on, but it's not inflation of our salaries. And when I was on the Laura Flanders show, on that little roundtable thing, and she talked about raising the minimum wage to $7 an hour like John Kerry's talking about, I said, hell, they ought to raise it to $15 an hour, and they ought to raise it next week. And if I was making $15 an hour, it might be a little bit better on me. It's not like I live in a luxurious friggin' apartment. I've got a nice little place here. It's basically my wife and I have a kitchen, a bathroom, and a bedroom, and that's pretty much it. And we've got this big utility area that's basically like a public area that we're pretty much using for storage, because we don't have room to put our books or bookshelves or anything like that. So it's not like we're living the friggin' life of Riley. If my roommate Don gets a job, because he's a teacher and assistant, and if he gets a job out of state, which he's always trying to get, or at least he's looking for work out of town, he's not necessarily going for that, we will move into his place, because then we would have two rooms, a kitchen, and a little living room, and it's a little bit more rent, but we can deal with it. Hopefully my wife can get on disability. If she gets on disability, that by itself should be enough to pay for rent. It depends on how much she gets. If she gets about $1,000 a month, that'll be wonderful, because that's enough to pay rent and bills together. So my salary we can just sack away and put more in savings, which is what I want to do, but I can't seem to do it, because every time I try, things happen. I was going to give my landlord a $200 check this week, but that went out the window because of the tire. And I was going to give him a $200 check last week, but that went out the window because I had to pay a stupid speeding ticket. I thought it was a BS ticket. I thought it was a bullshit ticket. But you can't argue with a bullshit with a speeding ticket. I mean, there are certain things that you can take the traffic court and win at, and I have done that before. But a speeding ticket is not one of them. And like I was saying, if you're living paycheck to paycheck like I am, and like most of you are who are listening out there, then you understand exactly what I'm talking about. You make barely enough to get by. And if you've got a landlord or an apartment complex that wants to be pricks about it, you can be totally screwed. That's what kept screwing us up when we were living in the apartment complex in Alpharetta. When I was behind, we kept getting killed with late fees, and the late fees were almost doubling our rent after a time, and it just got to a point where it was impossible to get caught up. And I wasn't working, I was only making unemployment, and you're just pulling your hair out because there's not only jobs to be found, but there's not any good paying jobs to be found. You know, and that's when they talk about the unemployment rate being 5.6% and how the economy's doing great, and that's just a bunch of horse shit. Anybody who knows anything, anybody who has any real experience going out looking for work nowadays knows how untrue that is. Even my landlord, who was a right winger, he was out of work for like 4 months trying to find jobs, and he's got much more people skills than I do. He's much better at doing that sort of thing than I am. And it took him a while. He's got management experience, and he can make a little bit of better salary once he gets going. The only people who are making real money are people who are capable of making a lot more money for other people, people who are good in sales or in marketing and stuff like that. If you're a regular working guy working the type of job that I do, or if you work at a fast food place or something like that, you're not going to make any kind of money. And like I said, the unemployment situation, the unemployment rate may be 5.6%, but there are a lot of people who are working jobs that pay far less than what they're used to. Far less than what they are used to. And that just is not showing up in the unemployment statistics. Plus, there are people who, and how they count the unemployment stuff is they count people who are actually on unemployment. And some people, once they get off unemployment, you know, they just stop looking. And there's a lot of people who've just stopped looking completely and have pretty much given up on it. And they're just, I don't know how they're living. Some of them aren't. And some people become homeless. Or they'll go to their parents' house and live and sulk in the living room and in their bedroom. And there's no way to make a real living unless again, you want to become, you know, a scumbag to a certain extent. If you want to be, if you don't have a good college education, the only real option for you, if you want to make serious money, is to be a salesperson, because there's no skill jobs anymore. The skill jobs that allowed people like my parents to earn a decent enough living to raise a family on simply do not exist anymore. They're not there. As I've brought up before, in the mid-1960s, I don't know the exact years, but my dad was making like $6.50 an hour. And that one salary, he was able to support a family of five, partly because the rents were much lower. If I'm not mistaken, we paid something like $80 a month for rent. Wouldn't you love to pay $80 a month for rent? A living wage is based upon you making in 1 week as much money as you have to pay a month in rent. That gives you enough money to pay the rent, and then your next paycheck pays the bills. Your bills will maybe take up half your next paycheck. And then everything else you can, you know, use for food and stuff like that. And groceries were a lot cheaper, too. A loaf of bread was, what, a dime, 15 cents? Now it's, what, a buck something? And how many people are still making $6.50 an hour? A lot of people are. And this is reality for a lot of people. And I understand that people say, well, you should go out and try to do better. And some people simply can't do better. Some people, that's as good as it gets. I mean, I'm almost in that situation now. I'm only slightly better than these people because at least I see that I have potential. I'm just not good enough or skilled enough to be able to make use of it. And that's why I pester you on the board and now in my message areas, wherever I can, to email Air America Radio. There's a link on the blog there. Just click on that and email them and let them know, hey, you'd like the Cup of Joe show to fill one of those nice little weekend slots that they have. And that would help me out a great deal, because if I land one of those, that's an actual paying thing. Plus, I can devote more time to the radio show instead of having to rush around like this. I've got to get this show done in about 4 hours or so and get it up and on the server in time for rantradio.com. Because I've missed their last couple of shows. And I don't like missing shows. I like to be responsible about it. But the truth of the matter is, I don't get paid for this. And my paying job and the situation with my wife has to take priority. It's as simple as that. I wish it could be otherwise. If this was my paying job, I would be able to donate more time to it and not have to go out and work 40 hours a week. And what I might wind up doing is, if I get the weekend gig and I'm only really working 20, 25 hours at that, I can go out and work a 20, 25-hour job, you know, to keep me honest as a working person so that I could talk about the issues that happen at work. And speaking of which, to change the subject only slightly, they did change me over on a Thursday to another line, to another group of people. And it's really, I can tell right away, it's really not going to be that much different. Because you just get a lot of gossipy women on there. I mean, I'm all for feminism, stuff like that. But, man, when you're talking about women who work in assembly, those types of jobs, they sit there all day and they talk about their personal problems and, you know, their boyfriends or their husbands. And, you know, they're really, really mundanes, you know. No imagination at all. Just life and, you know, raising family, going to work and maybe going to church. And that's really about it. And there's nothing wrong with that. But, God, it gets boring after a while. And some of them are real snotty about it, too. And that's what really bugged me about it, just being real snotty about it. You know, and I sit here and do this radio show on the internet, and they can't even comprehend the internet. They don't understand anything about it, or they don't want to understand it, and they don't want to understand anything about it. And that's really it. They don't really care. Some of them know how to use some email. Some of them, maybe. Maybe. I got some of my relatives who are fairly mundane, and even they start to get the idea of using email. But, you know, for the most part, they can't comprehend the very idea of putting together a radio show like I have here and just getting, you know, the programs you need or just what to talk about every week. They can't comprehend that. And because they can't comprehend that, they can't comprehend and understand me. And that's really the total truth of it, that they just can't understand who I am. And that's why they don't like me. And that's why I get on their case from time to time, and I get pissed off about things. Anyway, what have we got? About 30 seconds. I'm going to try to make these things exactly 15 minutes. I'm trying to discipline myself, you understand? Discipline myself. So we're going to go out for a break. We're going to hear from our friends at BuzzFlash.com, and we're going to play a little bit of music. In the meantime, Sam, why don't you go ahead and play us right out?
We'll be right back with more of the Tucker Joe Radio Show.
Welcome back to the BuzzFlash.com GOP Hypocrite of the Week. To understand the Bush GOP swift liars, you have to first understand that America has walked through the looking glass. Watching the Bush GOP swift liars receive credibility from the press is kind of like looking at a nightmarish wall of distorted funhouse mirrors. Except this isn't fun. This is a tragedy for America. In Bush's funhouse of dirty tricks, cowards are packaged as brave men, and brave men become victims of contemptible character assassination. Yet Bush, who let other young men die in Vietnam as he sunbathed in Texas, and who supported a war that he wouldn't fight in, won't denounce the ads of his surrogate hitmen. And Cheney, who cheered for the Vietnam War while receiving multiple deferments and avoiding all military service, is also just fine with this whack job on a man who volunteered to face enemy gunfire and was given medals for his bravery. The Bush GOP swift liars had their start with Tricky Dick Nixon when John O'Neill was used in an attempt to undercut Kerry's charismatic leadership of veterans against the Vietnam War. Karl Rove and Bush, desperate to change the subject from their disastrous policies, pulled O'Neill and his band of merry losers out from under their rock and tacitly support their every lie. However, the swift boat liars are being exposed. The Washington Post revealed that the citation for the Bronze Star one of them received confirms Kerry's story and refutes the claims of this particular swift liar. Another one of the swift liars has posted racist remarks on a right-wing bulletin board. And another one is intimately connected with Republican attack dog coordinators from the past. To top it off, their ads are financed by one of Bush's biggest contributors. Although Bush likes to pretend he's G.I. Joe, courtesy of the Karl Rove special effects machine, he's been a coward his whole life. Bush was afraid to serve in Vietnam, but was a booster of the war. He was AWOL from the National Guard. He can't hold a news conference without it being scripted,
and he can't hold a rally without excluding anyone who's not a Republican. He's afraid of anything that might require him to independently show courage and leadership, because he knows he's all hat and no cattle. So the Bush GOP swift liars throw up some flack to defame a man, John Kerry, who served his country bravely in Vietnam, and to protect a coward, George W. Bush, who lets others do the dying and fighting for him. That's not just wrong. It's un-American, unpatriotic, and downright despicable. And that's why the Bush GOP swift liars share the well-deserved dishonor of being named the BuzzFlash GOP Hypocrites of the Week. Until next week, remember our motto at BuzzFlash.com. So many Republican hypocrites, so little time. Catch up with you soon.
I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Listen out, you
There's a website fighting President Bunny Pants every day.
BartCop.com.
BartCop mixes unrelenting outrage and piercing humor with his favorite fine tequila.
BartCop.com.
On the web since 1996 with news and commentary not approved by Karl Rove.
BartCop.com.
Live chat rooms to discuss Bush's crimes of the day.
BartCop Radio.
Uncensored invective aimed at those who deserve it most.
BartCop.com.
Fighting the Bush family evil empire.
BartCop.com.
But we need your help.
Go there now.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
BartCop.com.
Oh no, why did we have to go? Bush keeps on lying. Children keep on dying. Please, please, can't we pack and leave? Smirk ain't no savior. 43's a failure. Bush lied, soldiers died, the heart of America broke inside. Whoever dreamed it could be so bad, he's the worst president we ever had. Get out of Iraq, get out of Iraq. Get out, get out, get out.
And we're back on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Again, that URL is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and the email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. Please email me. I've been getting some pretty good emails lately, actually, and some donations, and those are very nice. I won't mention the names, but just a couple of people have donated some money to me, and that's great. I've just about got enough to get a new mixer. Basically, all that money stays in the PayPal account. I don't touch that, and I'm looking at getting a Behringer MX-802A online at eBay.com for $49. And I just wanted to double-check something on that. And that's really not a bad price for a very nice mixer that has more microphone inputs. And I can do more things with it as far as doing stuff on the phone is concerned, because I want the phone conversations to be almost as clear as the regular doing the mic stuff. The music you just heard, by the way, was Simple Fears with Get Out of Iraq. And I urge everyone to go to simplefears.com, and you can purchase that song, download it, for $1.25. It'll help some friends of mine who can use the money. They put some money into making that song, and they'd like at least to make that money back. So please go to simplefears.com and download Get Out of Iraq. It's a really cool rock song, and not one of those folk song, little hippie type of music. Anyway. What time is it? It's 8:13 p.m. on a Sunday, and I'm still trying to get this thing done in time for rantradio.com tonight. Now, the big news this week is, of course, the swift boat liars for Bush and their ad and their connections to the Republican campaign, which, by the way, is illegal, but not that it really matters. There have been a bunch of posts on this subject on the blogs, and I'm going to get to some of those in a minute. But the truth of the matter is that these people here who are putting these accusations out are lying, and they are part of the Bush campaign. And, of course, John O'Neill, the head scumbag of this group, is basically a hatchet man who's been a hatchet man to go after John Kerry in particular, that Richard Nixon set up against John Kerry back in 1971. C-SPAN has the interview, if you care to see it, from the old Dick Cavett show, the debate between John Kerry and John O'Neill about what was going on back there. And Kerry, after the war, started Vietnam Veterans for Truth, and Vietnam Veterans Against the War. And, you know, I've talked about this briefly from time to time, and I want to go into this in more detail here because I am a veteran, and the people who, for the most part, go into war, well, like 99% of the people who go and fight a war are working class people like myself. The very rich usually find ways to get out of it or put themselves in a position where they don't face any serious combat, at least they have since the 1960s, since Korea and Vietnam. Pat Robertson had other things to do than to go and fight in Korea. Dick Cheney had other things to do than to go and fight in Vietnam. Now, of course, Bill Clinton did not go to fight in Vietnam, but the difference is that he opposed the war from the start, and he didn't care for going out there and risking his life and killing other people for something that he didn't agree with to begin with. Now, while you might not agree with that stance, you can certainly honor that stance. But, again, we're talking about Republicans, and we're talking about current Republicans, and nothing is beyond them. But at any rate, Mr. Clinton was never an open advocate for war, which is like a lot of the Chicken Hawks are. They're certainly for war so long as it's being, you know, the only blood being spilt is other people's blood, and primarily working people's blood, the working poor or the very poor to begin with. And it's really sickening that they're leveling these attacks. They're completely unnecessary, but that's how these people are. I mean, it shouldn't surprise us. There are no rules to these people. There are no rules, absolutely none. They will do what they want, and they will do what they can get away with. And even if they can't get away with it, they'll still do it because they'll get away with it just enough for them to accomplish what they want to accomplish. But what's really staggering about the whole thing is how the media are basically co-conspirators in all this, if that's the right word, accomplices. Because if they were doing their jobs, they would have jumped right on this thing and said, hey, you know, this is all a bunch of bullshit. It's taken us in the blogosphere to get these people going on this stuff. And the fact of the matter is that they're not reporting this properly. They're sitting there saying the usual fucking he said, she said gossip shit, and really not reporting what the official fucking record says. And the thing about it is, the official record is full of quotes from these very same people talking about Kerry's bravery, which means that either they were lying then or they're lying now. And I think that they're lying now. Several people have made the point that the only reason these people are coming after Kerry is because they disagreed with his stance on the Vietnam War and with the comments that he made about atrocities that were supposedly committed by American soldiers during Vietnam. You know, those are real issues and real things you can talk about. But goddammit, let's stop smearing the man's combat record. At least he fucking has a combat record. And because the press is treating it like this, George Bush is sitting here getting away with being AWOL, which is what he was. You know, there are quotes of him talking about how he didn't want to go to Vietnam. On his form for the service, he had marked off that he did not want to go to Vietnam. On the other hand, Kerry volunteered to go. And you get people who just buy the bullshit so easily. Oh, he lied about his record. He did not lie about his record. You don't recommend yourself for a fucking Purple Heart or a Silver Star or a Bronze Star. You don't recommend yourself for that. Other people put that stuff in for you. Does anybody fucking understand this? Is this not crystal clear? It's not, oh yeah, I got hurt. Can I have a Purple Heart? Oh, man. It's just incredible. Now, the whole thing about that is that when you get into a situation like this with people who have absolutely no sense of morals, no sense of values, just all they care about is let's do anything for the short term to win in the short term. Never mind what it does for the country. Never mind anything. Let's just go out there and shoot first and ask questions later. And they have absolutely no morals and no scruples. These are the type of people who they like that torture in Abu Ghraib. Don't listen to anything. They like that. They get hard-ons of it. If they're keeping the videos of it, they're spending nights jacking off to this stuff. They love it. Because they love fucking having power, and they love using that power. It is un-fucking believable to me. Not that they believe this way, because there's certainly plenty of sadistic motherfuckers out there in the world. But what really gets to me is that they're allowed to get away with it. In ways that would be unimaginable for us to get away with. Could you imagine if Bill Clinton had tried to say that Bob Dole lied about his record? You know, maybe you can make an issue about the fact that maybe Bob Dole did something stupid to get himself injured during the war. Just like Ann Coulter said it was something stupid that Max Cleland. All the veterans on our side, or, you know, at least as far as the elected officials are concerned, Max Cleland, John Kerry, these are all combat veterans. General Clark spoke up against stuff like that, and it's disgraceful. It's disgraceful, but these people have no morals. They have absolutely none. If you listen to them on their talk show and you see what the reality is, you'll realize how low they are going to stoop. And you know what? We need to start fighting back in the same kind of manner. Just hit them back hard. That's what Clinton did. And we don't do that because we're afraid. You know, we are worried about long-term circumstances. We are worried about what's good for the country as a whole. Yes, we want some power for ourselves. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with the Republicans wanting to get power. But there's ways and means you do that, and there's things you do with the power when you have it. And the only thing these people do with power is go out and get more of it. And who they have to stomp on, who they have to kill, literally, to get that, doesn't really matter. And if one of them falls by the wayside, poor loser, man. Just a loser. Can't deal with it. Got to be a loser. It's just sickening to me that they're raising these points with the way... You know, someone made the point somewhere that what they're probably doing is trying to do something so despicable that they'll get them to ban all of the 527s, because the 527s, for those of you who don't know, it's one of the loopholes in the campaign finance laws. And it's basically an organization that can go ahead and produce commercials and stuff like that. The Democrats have been much better at using these than the Republicans have. And two of the larger ones are MoveOn and ACT, Americans Coming Together, and MoveOn.org. And these are the guys who are partly leading the countercharge, a counterattack against the Swift Boat Liars for Bush. And what they're trying to do is do something so despicable so that they say, okay, well, we'll take out these guys if you take out these guys. But there's a big fucking difference. ACT and MoveOn.org have existed for years. MoveOn got started, in fact, in 98 after the Clinton impeachment trial. That's the very meaning of their name. Let's you know, censure the guy and move on. And ACT has been around for at least 4 or 5 years. The Swift Boat Liars for Bush have only basically been put together for the sole purpose of this campaign. They're not an actual political action group. They were put together by the Bush campaign people, and they have people who work in the Bush campaign working for Swift Boat Vets. They have Republican operatives hosting them at Republican meetings, fairs, speeches, stuff like that, events. That's the word I was looking for. And they advertise that. They caught them distributing flyers in Florida, I think it was. You know, they're part of the Bush campaign. They're part of the Bush campaign. And the media is just not really reporting that very much. The New York Times had a big article about all their ties to Karl Rove and to Texas businessmen. And you wonder if anybody out there is really, really paying attention to this stuff. You know, I mean, we on the blogosphere are, but you know what? We were political junkies to begin with. It's just very sickening when you look at it. And you know, basically, they're dragging us into the gutter, and we're going to have to be go down there once in a while and slug it out with them. But you have to understand, this is the nature of the beast. This is how they are. This is what they do, and they really don't care. I read an interesting article called The Spite Vote about why poor people vote Republicans. Poor working people vote Republican. And because, you know, voting Republican does no good for any poor person at all. No good for a working person. Because they work so far against the interests of working people, it's ridiculous. All this bullshit about, you know, rugged individualism is just horseshit. Because regular working people who don't necessarily have the skills to be a good salesman or to be a business owner, they get screwed by these policies all the time. And you would think that working people would vote Democratic just because, you know, it's in their own best interest. And I've talked about that before, and other people have talked about that. But you know what? Someone made a very interesting point. The reason why they don't vote with the Democrats is because they don't like the millionaire Democrats. Not so much on a personal level, but because of the fact that these people are happy. You know, the big media celebrities and stuff like that, they see them as being happy and rich, and they can't stand that. Have you ever met people like that at work? I certainly have. People who just want to make you miserable. They're miserable, and therefore you have to be miserable. There's a lot of people out there like that. And I see so many people at work who work themselves like crazy, even though they're getting screwed. And they resent me because my attitude is kind of like, you know, do what you need to do. But, you know, if you do more, they just take advantage of you. And they always do. Anybody who goes out there and works for a living, especially if you work in a manufacturing plant like I do, you know that's the absolute total fucking truth. If you try to go the extra mile, they just take advantage of you. It happens at my work all the fucking time. They just take advantage of you. And so in order to spite these people, in order to bring them down to their level, they vote Republican. Even though the Republicans are very rich and wealthy too, but, you know, unless they're laughing at people, Republicans are the biggest bunch of sourpusses you'd ever fucking see. The only time they get any real humor is when they're laughing at people, when they're making fun of someone who's been knocked down. That's the enjoyment they get. That's what they talk about with us, and they say we don't have a sense of humor, is that we won't laugh with them when we see someone being kicked in the streets. But I've got a good sense of humor. I've got a great sense of humor. I just won't laugh, you know, at stuff like that. I don't think that's particularly funny. They're welcome to think it's funny if they do, but, you know, they're just not very humorous people, and the people who vote for these guys would rather see someone else be miserable than someone else be happy. Or be happy themselves. Some people don't want to be happy. They feel guilty about being happy. Some of us, like me to a certain extent, we're always worried if some good stuff happens. We wait for the other shoe to drop, because something bad always happens when something good comes along, right? Oh, boy. You know, I'm not as angry as this week as I was last week. So for those of you expecting a big angry tirade, I'm sorry. Maybe next segment when we talk about Beachon and some other things. Until then, we're going to take a little break. Sam, why don't you go ahead and play us out?
The Cup of Joe Radio Show will be right back.
It was back last October, I believe it was. We was going to hold a tent service off at this college town. And we got there about dinner time on Saturday. And different ones of us thought that we ought to get us a mouthful to eat before that we set up the tent. And so we got off of the truck and followed this little bunch of people through this small little bitty patch of woods there. And we come up on a big sign. It says, "Get something to eat here." And I went up and got me two hot dogs and a big orange drink. And before that I could take every mouthful of that food, this whole raft of people come up around me and got me to where I couldn't eat nothing, up like, and I dropped my big orange drink. I did. Well, friends, they commenced to move, and they want so much that I could do but move with them. Well, we commenced to go through all kinds of doors and gates and I don't know what all. And I looked up over one of them and it says North Gate. And we kept on going through there and pretty soon we come up on a young boy. And he says, ticket, please. And I says, friend, I don't have a ticket. I don't even know where it is that I'm going. I did. Well, he says, come out as quick as you can. And I says, I'll do her. I'll turn right around the first chance I get. Well, we kept on moving through there, and pretty soon everybody got where it was that they was a-going because they parted, and I could see pretty good. I could. And what I seen was this whole raft of people a-setting on these two banks and a-looking at one another across this pretty little green cow pasture. Well, they was. And somebody had tuck and drawed white lines all over it and drove posties in it and I don't know what all. And I looked down there and I seen five or six convicts a-running up and down and a-blowing whistles. They was. And then I looked down there and I seen these pretty girls a-wearing these little bitty short dresses and a-dancing around. And so I sat down and thought I'd see what it was that was going to happen. I did. And about the time I got set down good, I looked down there and I seen 30 or 40 men come running out of one end of a great big outhouse down there. They did. And everybody where I was a-setting got up and hollered. And about that time, 30 or 40 come running out of the other end of that outhouse and the other bank full, they got up and hollered. And I asked this fellow that was besetting beside of me, I says, friend, what is it that they're hollering for? Well, he whopped me on the back and he says, buddy, have a drink. Well, I says, I believe I will have another big orange. And I got it and sat back down. And when I got down there again, I seen that them men had got in two little bitty bunches down there. They had rail close together. And they voted. They did. They voted and elected one man apiece. And them two men come out in the middle of that cow pasture and shook hands like they hadn't seen one another in a long time. And then a convict come over to where they was a-standing, and he took out a quarter, and they commenced to odd man right there. They did. Well, after a while, I seen what it was that there's odd manning for. It was that both bunches full of them men wanted this funny-looking little pumpkin to play with. They did, and I know, friends, that they couldn't eat it because they kicked it the whole evening and it never busted. But anyhow, what I was a-telling was that both bunches full wanted that thing. And one bunch got it, and it made the other bunch just as mad as they could be. And, friends, I seen that evening the awfulest fight that I have ever seen in my life. I did. They would run at one another and kick one another and throw one another down and stomp on one another and grind their feet in one another and I don't know what all. And just as fast as one of them would get hurt, they'd tote him off and run another one. Well, they'd done that as long as I sat there. But pretty soon, this boy that had said, ticket, please, he come up to me and he says, friend, you're going to have to leave because it is that you don't have a ticket. And I says, well, all right. And I got up and left. And I don't know, friends, to this day what it was that there's a-doing down there, but I have studied about it. And I think that it's some kindly of a contest where they see which bunchful of them men can take that pumpkin and run from one end of that cow pasture to the oven without either getting knocked down or stepping in something.
back on the Cup of Joe radio show. I am your not-so-humble host, Joe Vecchio, the voice of the working man, the voice of the radical middle, and the voice of those who have been unvoiced by the anti-worker policies of the Bush administration and its corporate allies. Once again, I'd like to remind you of the URL, which is cupojoe.blogspot.com, and email address joevec@bellsouth.net. That's joevec@bellsouth.net, short for Joe Vecchio. That was Andy Griffith, by the way, with What It was football, and I played that because we're starting to see preseason games on the TV now, and the Falcons won their last preseason game. And, I'm less of a Falcons fan than I am a Michael Vick fan. I don't really have a favorite football team. I have a favorite baseball team, the Braves. Baseball. I have a favorite baseball team, the Braves. I used to like the Mets. I grew up in Brooklyn. And I still kind of look at them, but I don't really follow them as heavily as I did. And I don't follow baseball or sports in general as much as I once used to because I'm concerned with other things. To me, that's kind of a frivolous thing right now to think about sports. But at any rate, I like watching Michael Vick play because he's so exciting and you never know what he's going to do. He's so fast and he's got such a great arm. And he's really, really rewriting the way we think about quarterbacks. But it's really because of his skill. I mean, you know, a guy like that comes along once every long while. And we thought we had seen that in Randall Cunningham. And we thought we had seen that in Donovan McNabb and in some of the other ones like Aaron Brooks, who is Vick's cousin, I believe. But there's nobody like Michael Vick right now. So I thought, I really like that little bit too. Andy Griffith is really, really good. I love the Andy Griffith show. I even like Matlock a little bit. You know, Matlock! Matlock! My wife hates it when I do that. She's looking at me and says, oh, God. My wife is still not feeling good. And as soon as I finish this, I'm going to get her something to eat. Don't worry, honey, I will. Make you a nice sandwich. I got some ham, and I got some bologna, and I got some chicken breast. That sound good to you? She said she didn't know Georgia had a basketball team. Yeah, Georgia's got the Hawks. The Atlanta Hawks. My wife is not a huge sports person. The Hawks, of course, then again, some people will say we really don't have a professional basketball team. We have the Hawks. They've been bad for so long. Oh, shit. Where was I? Beachon kind of answered my response. He says he really doesn't believe in, you know, that we should be in prison. But his words still kind of implied that we are somehow less real people. And the point he tried to make was that it's the liberal elite who live in their own fantasy world. And to a certain extent, in a kind of warped, sideways type of deal, he has a point. But my issue with him is that he lives in his own little fucking fantasy world. And that he doesn't really have a right. I mean, yeah, he deals with real life situations the same as you and I do. And he's not immune to them. But it's remarkable to me how he can sit there and say that people on the left-hand side are elitist and scum and not looking out for our best interest, while completely ignoring what all the people on the hardcore right are doing and all the lies they're telling. I mean, the Swift vote thing is a perfect example. I mean, he's sitting there saying that Kerry lied about his war record. I mean, how much of a fantasy world can you say about that? Kerry hasn't lied about his war record. Has he used it in the campaign? Yes, he has. There's nothing wrong with that. He probably wouldn't make such an issue of it if they wouldn't go ahead and make such an issue of it themselves. I thought about it real hard, and I decided not to go ahead and not to ban Beachon from the board, partly because it's too much trouble, and partly because I'm just not the type to do that shit. I mean, I did that to a couple of people who were just being particularly obnoxious. The other right-wing type that troll that hangs out on my board, Ross, who comes in and makes sarcastic comments from time to time, he also lives in his own little fantasy world. And I think this goes back to what I was talking about, people being happy. They just don't like the idea. Some people just don't like the idea of people, other people being happy. And of course, I've said this myself about my column about smartasses and high horses. there are a group of hardcore lefters that I do not agree with, and a lot of them are very rich, and they're very successful, and they have more money than I could even possibly imagine. And even though I might agree with them on some social issues, I do not identify with them in any way, shape, or form, and they do not identify with me. They don't understand the problems that regular working people like myself have to go through. A lot of them come from families who were rich and became rich because of the policies of the New Deal Democrats back in the 30s and of liberal progressive politics in general through the decades that followed. Tip O'Neill, the former Speaker of the House, once said that we did our jobs too well. He led the Democrats when they were really on top of things. He said, we Democrats did our jobs too well. We made people rich enough to want to vote Republican. And you know, the thing is, a lot of people who were rich, not all of them, some of them made it from the bottom, started out, worked hard, and found themselves a good, you know, occupation or opened up a business and was proper. That's fine. But a lot of people who are wealthy became wealthy because they inherited money or they got it from elsewhere. And the way the loan structures are set up now, if you're very, very poor like I am, it's very difficult to get a kind of loan because someone like me, I have nothing that would be considered to be collateral, you know. And I've got a bad track record for money. I'm no good at it. I'm no good at keeping it. That's all I can say. It burns a hole in my pocket like it does with these tires, you know. Although I have been told that it's not so much that I don't earn enough, it's not so much that I spend too much, it's that I just don't earn enough. And I know a lot of you out there are in the same boat I am. But anyway, back to Beach On and back to the fantasy world. There are a lot of people who live in that kind of fantasy world. Libertarians and objectivists certainly live in a fantasy world. I mean, they sit there and they think that everything that can be accomplished by individuals working separately. But it doesn't work that way. I mean, there's no I in team, you know, and that's what we are, a team. And you can sit there and scream socialism this and socialism that, but there are certain things that government does very well. There are certain things that government does much better than private industry, and there are certain things that governments have to do because there are certain things that you don't earn a profit on. I don't know how many times we have to do these examples. You know, the highway system, the federal highway system. Could any private industry have built the federal highway system the way it is now? No. Why should they? You're not going to make any money off of it. It costs a fortune to pave these roads. And that's why a lot of people bitch about taxes. And I'm like, you know, if there was a way of doing this without having taxes, that would be wonderful. And I'm wondering, I always wondered if part of it was that people felt that the filling out the tax forms every year was too much of an intrusion on their time and into their privacy, you know, knowing how much they've earned and, you know, how many hours they worked and all that other stuff. And it's like a lot of people would probably consider that to be an intrusion. It wouldn't be a problem if it was just a question of paying the taxes, you know. And I know every year on April 15th, they have that thing about the right-wing coast gets on and gets people to say how much they paid in taxes. And some idiot will always say, well, I didn't pay anything. I got money back, which is, of course, ridiculous. The only reason you get money back is because you paid more than you were supposed to pay. They will deduct X amount of money from your salary. And if you paid more than you were supposed to pay, then they give it back. And some people resent giving the government that money even for that short time so that they get it. Some people are just, you know, they're just fucked up the ass, you know. They're just fucked in the head, and they just don't understand. You know, they live on a foundation that's built because people cooperate and build a community and build a society that has these things. And if it wasn't there, they couldn't exist in their libertarian fantasy world. They simply couldn't, unless they want to go out in the woods. I mean, maybe some people are good survivalists, but you know what? We've gotten used to certain things. And even for those who haven't gotten used to them, who could live without it, life is much, much more difficult if you have to spend every day worrying about whether or not you're going to be able to have enough food. Excuse me. You know, and that's why I go on about libertarians. I go on about greens because the green, it's more of a strategic thing. I understand and appreciate their arguments and their ideas more then I understand the right wingers because I identify with what they're talking about. But my argument with them is strategy based, and also the fact that, you know, there's a bunch among them that are snobs. Jello Biafra brought that up when he talked about how, you know, if you don't think the same way we do, then you're wrong. You know, if you wear lipstick, you can't be a feminist. And there's nothing more important than the punk rock scene. And you shouldn't even talk to someone who earned a penny off his hard work without at least beating them up first, you know? There are people who are like that, little cliques. I face the same thing at work. I mean, as I've said before, I don't necessarily identify with the people that I work with because I think differently than they do. I don't want to say I'm better or worse, but I'm just different. And I see things that perhaps, in a certain way, that perhaps they don't look at. But I'm standing up for them because I'm standing up for myself in the long run. Because if they're happy on the job, if they're making money and they're content, they're more likely to obey the laws and they're more likely to want to be a part of something rather than fighting among us. I mean, you could have a situation where if people don't earn enough money, eventually they get poor enough, they'll turn to crime because they have to. And, you know, if you're stealing because you have to, because you have no other choice, because society has turned against you and not given you the opportunity to make the best of yourself, or even if you want to work and you're just an unskilled laborer that you can't support yourself, then I'm not saying that it's justified, but it's understandable. Let's forget about ideology for just a second. Let me deal with one simple, straightforward fact, okay? There are approximately 6 billion people in the world today. And each and every one of those, in order to survive, needs a certain amount of water, food, clothing, and shelter. All those four are necessary elements. The last two, more from protection from the environment than from anything else. Because clothing can be a measure of status as well. But the thing is, unless you're starting to advocate that certain people have to be killed off completely in order for you to survive, and I'm sure there are some of you out there who are advocating that, and even Beachon, to a certain extent, doesn't have a problem with that because he's all in favor of the Iraqi war and us killing innocent Iraqis, supposedly for our protection and for our safety, which is, of course, horseshit. But the question is, how do you provide for those 6 billion people? And, you know, according to according to the Center for Disease Control and some other organizations, the World Health Organization from the United Nations, about 1 billion people go without enough food every day, and most of them are children. And we certainly have the resources to feed everybody, but everything's kind of, you know, all being hoarded by a smaller group of people, and mainly Americans. 6 billion people on the planet, there are approximately 300 million American citizens. Approximately, between 260 and 300 million. I don't have the exact figures, but that's close enough. And if we continue our isolationist, we'll do what we feel like policies, we're going to be up shit creek without a paddle, because you know what? I don't like those numbers. I don't care how much we spend on our military. It's not enough. As we're learning in Iraq, the greatest military in the world, the greatest military in history, and we're being held to a standstill in Iraq. Oh, geez, where's the time go? I've got only a few seconds here. Okay, let me bring this to a close. This is Joe Vecchio with the Cup of Joe Radio Show. I'm going to be signing off now. This is show number 55. Again, the cupojoe.blogspot.com. The email address is joevec@bellsouth.net. And please email Air America Radio. Tell them you want to see Cup of Joe on the air. Until next time, bye. Joe Vecchio, the host of the Cup of Joe radio show, is proud to be a member of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 2127. However, the views of Joe Vecchio do not necessarily represent the views of Local 2127, the IBEW, or its affiliate, the AFL-CIO. Please remember to support your working brothers and sisters and help keep the American dream alive. The Cup of Joe Radio Show has been a production of Jove Enterprises, Incorporated.